Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
Okay, so the 37th Shir of Rambam. We're going to finish the book of Ahava, book of love, which talks about the things we do to express our love for Hashem. And the thing that comes to mind, of course, when I talk about loving Hashem is tefillah, prayer. And Sefer Ahava ends with Seder Tefillah Kol Hashana. Further to what we have talked about in the last 2 days, and then we're going to go from the book of Ahava, move into the book of Zmanim, and start to learn about Shabbat, the holiest day of the week. So, it's a few points. Number one, with regard to the Seder Nusach HaTefillah, the Rambam tells us what the order of the Kaddish is. Now, the Kaddish, the origin of Kaddish, is extremely old. In fact, it seems that it may precede all of the prayers. The concept of publicly declaring Hashem's greatness in the Medrash is traced back to Yaakov Avinu and his sons in the last moment of his life. And he's not sure, he doesn't know if they're faithful, and they cry out, Shema Yisrael, listen, our father Israel, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, we have no second thoughts or doubts, we are committed to the same monotheism, same oneness of God as you. And Yaakov Avinu responds, Baruch Shem, Kavod Malchusil Elamvad. This is called the concept of Kedusha, or Kaddish, to sanctify Hashem's name publicly. That refrain later happens with Moshe Rabbeinu, in the time of Mount Sinai, but the concept of somebody leading others in the praise of Hashem is the bare bones, the essence of Kaddish. The Kaddish as we have it can be found, traced to two Midrashim. One is a Midrash of Rabbi Akiva, and one is a Midrash that's a generation later of the name of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, stories of them helping souls find solace through the recitation of Kaddish publicly. Now, originally, Kaddish was a part of the davening, which meant that, as the Rambam says, actually in Mishnah Torah, Kaddish always accompanies every minyan. Every time there's a quorum that prays, there's a Kaddish in the beginning, and there's a Kaddish at the end. The Kaddish, thanks to the story of Rabbi Akiva, became a way to elevate a neshama. So the problem was that there were many small children who had to say Kaddish, but they couldn't lead the services. So for this, we created the mourner's Kaddish for somebody who didn't know how to daven or was too young to lead the services in daven, that at the very minimum they would be able to say the Kaddish, which is why it's customary in many communities for people who are saying Kaddish to try to be the chazan if possible. Because that really is the original takana. And the reason that it's called Kaddish Yatom, mourner's Kaddish, a Yatom tends to refer to a small child who has lost their parents and is not capable of leading the services. So the Kaddish in its present form develops fully only during Zman HaGeonim, and that's why there are distinctions between the Kaddish that's said by Eidut HaMizrach, by the Sfardim, or the Kaddish that's recited by the Jews in Ashkenaz, and then of course there's that V'yatzmach Purkonei, Vikarev Mishichei, which is said by Sfardim as well as those who follow the Nusach of the Arizal. The Rambam also gives us the liturgy of Birchas HaMazon, and I will use this to prove a point, actually. A number of days ago, when we talked about the mitzvah of Birchas HaMazon, I explained to you that the concept of Birchas HaMazon, the whole notion of Hazana Sa'olam Kulay, goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the idea of thanking Hashem for the land of Israel is something Yehoshua introduced to the Jewish people when they came across the ocean, or the little river called the Jordan. And then we have David HaMelech and Shlomo who create the Bracha of Rachim. But as I explained to you, it's impossible to suggest that they actually put the formal liturgy of Birchat HaMazon together, because what were Jews saying before Yehoshua? And what were they saying before David HaMelech? And what were they saying before Shlomo? So obviously, we say that the basic premise of that blessing comes from Moshe Rabbeinu, Yehoshua, David and Shlomo. So for example, Al Yerushalayim Yirecha, this is the prayer in the time of David HaMelech. Al Abayit HaGadol HaKadosh HaZeh, the great and holy house, this refers to Shlomo HaMelech. And then, of course, the additional bracha, which we know comes after the story of Bar Kokhba's rebellion that was crushed. And years later, that's when HaTova HaMeitiv is added on. Now, what proves this is that the Rambam, in his Seder Hichos Tfilos Kol Hashana, he includes Nusach Birchat HaMazon. If it was so simple that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down Birchat HaMazon, why would the Rambam have to include it? Yesterday we discussed the notion that the earliest Sidurim only appear, the written volumes or manuscripts of the prayers only appear in Zman HaGaonim. We have Natrunoi Goin and of Amram Goin, Seder HaMamrami or Seder Eilam. These are the first Sidurim. So the first Siddurim then had versions of Birchat HaMazon. And the Rambam, in the post-Gaonic era, now in the time of Rishonim, the Rambam is saying, okay, here's the Nusach, here is the proper order of Birchat HaMazon, as was fully crystallized and established by Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. The Rambam also finishes off with the blessings of Haftorah. And I want to say something about the Haftorah blessings. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. The blessings of the Haftorah are the youngest blessings that we have. Why? Because all of the blessings were created by Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. When do Anshei Knesset HaGdolah hold sway? In the very beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash. Ezra is the leader of Anshei Knesset HaGdolah when the blessings, when the prayers are formalized. So where does Haftorah come from? So in the Avud Raham, and it's brought down in the Levush also, it says, Haftorah is an injunction of our sages. Tiknu lahafti b'navi. Mishum ma'isa shahaya. There was a story. The story was, Pam achat gazru al Yisrael shalei yikru b'teira. There was a decree on the pain of death that the Torah should not be read publicly. So what did they do? They still came to Shul. They still gathered. But there were informers. And you could be murdered. You could be killed for reading the Torah. Amdu v'kara b'navim. So they said, okay, we can't read the five books of Moses. We'll read something from Yeshayahu, something from Yirmiyahu, something from Treasa. We'll take something from the prophets and we'll read that instead. And they actually did that like in the order we have in the Shul. They used to read seven aliyot. So they read that seven readings from the Navi. Later, the Gezeira was battle. This decree was nullified, but the minhag did not fully dissipate. Now, I read elsewhere that this is likely the time of Antiochus. The time of Antiochus is almost 2 centuries after Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. So we're talking then about prayers and blessings for the Haftorah, which come only centuries after the rest of the blessings are made, which means it would have to be the youngest blessings. And interestingly, there's a significant variation between the blessings of the Haftorah in Eidot HaMizrach for the Sfaradim and Ashkenazim, and this may in fact be why. Because it comes at a later time. So the Rambam finishes off the Seder Tfilos Kol HaShana by talking about the blessings of the Haftorah. And he talks about which Haftorah do we read. So you have to think about it this way. When they first started to read from the Navi, they couldn't have done so in perfect unison. People living all across the land of Israel, they couldn't post on Facebook which Haftorah we're reading this Shabbos. Or send out even a telegraph to everybody. So this idea caught traction, and people were coming to Shul, and they don't know what to do, so they started reading the Haftorah, and at some point there was commonality. There were certain readings in the later, in the prophets, of the Nevi'im and the Ketuvim, which were seen to mirror the readings of the actual Torah, that weekly parsha. But there were different customs that developed, and those customs persist until this very day. Different communities, sometimes, not all the Haftorot, some Haftorot are ubiquitous, but some Haftorot are read, we have one Haftorah in one community, another Haftorah in another community. There's also differences about where we start the Haftorah, where we finish the Haftorah. All of this comes because of the way the Haftorah developed. Once we started to read the Torah again, so then the seventh reading was reread, or a part of it was reread, so that the person who was going to be maftir, the person who would be reading from the Nevi'im, would first read from the actual Torah itself, and then it would be maftir min ha-Navi. Then he would read the additional part from the Navi. The word Haftorah, of course, means to finish off, to conclude, a conclusion. Now, the Haftorah, interestingly, does not always follow the Parsha, the portion of that week. The Haftorah always follows the last reading. So, for example, if Shabbat's going to be Rosh Chodesh, then the Haftorah is going to be on the theme of Rosh Chodesh. Because there are going to be two Sefer Torah that are taken out. First Sefer Torah, we're going to read whatever Parsha it is. And the second Sefer Torah, we're going to read the offerings of Rosh Chodesh. So that becomes Maftir. It becomes the eighth reading, and therefore the Haftorah that follows is going to be Me'inyan from the same theme of that last reading of the Torah. And what happens, for example, on a Shabbat, where we're going to have three readings. So we have a regular Parsha. And it's Shabbat. Very nice. It's also Rosh Chodesh. Oh, I have a Rosh Chodesh reading. But it's also Hanukkah. So now we have three Sifrei Torah that are coming out. For Shabbat, for Rosh Chodesh, and for Hanukkah. Well, sometimes when we have the additional readings that are read, we sometimes have it could fall on Rosh Chodesh, which means you have three Sifrei Torah in a row. So then the Haftorah will follow the theme of the last reading. That's the general rule. The Rambam in the Seder Tefillas Kol Hashana goes through all the weekly Torah readings, and he says, so for this reading, this is the Haftorah that mirrors and corresponds to that particular reading. And of course, the Rambam finishes off with the idea that the last Haftorot of the year do not follow the Parsha at all. And this is called Shiva Denechemasa, or Shiva Denechemta, the seven Haftorot, which we talk about consolation after Tisha B'Av. And that follows from the Shabbat after Tisha B'Av, which we refer to as Shabbat Nachamu because of the Haftorah that's read. And that takes us straight through all the way until Seis Asis, until Rosh Hashanah. And the same idea is also found in the Tosfos, talks about this in the Gemara Megillah. It's found in Avud Raham and other places. Ezra is the one who instituted which parshiot are read when. He choreographed the parshiot so that we read a certain parsha before Shavuot, and a certain parsha, a certain Torah portion before Rosh Hashanah. He made sure to choreograph. He hardened that takana as to when exactly the parshiot would begin and end. And that's the reason for sometimes us reading two parshiot on one Shabbat, because sometimes we have 13 months in the year, sometimes we have 12 months in the year. It depends if it's a leap year. It also depends on how the Yomim Tovim fall, how many of the Shabbatot will be included in the Yom Tov when we supersede the reading of Shabbat and we go to a Yom Tov reading. So for this reason, there are several variations. There's a formula of what we read when, and everybody agrees, this is something which is universal in the Jewish world, that in the last 7 weeks, last seven Shabbatot of the year, the Haftorah does not mirror the Torah reading at all. Rather, it follows the time of the year in which we're in. And then we start the year off also with the Haftorah of Teyuvta, with the Haftorah of Tshuva. That's the Haftorah that start the year off, rather than the Haftorot that are mirroring the weekly Parsha of that's read in Shabbat and Shul. So that's basically the end of Seder Tefillas Kol Hashana. And from here, we move now into the third book of the Rambam, the book which is called Zmanim, or Times. And of course, there are special times for the Jewish people. The most special time comes on a regular basis. It is the seventh day of the week. It's the only day of the week that actually has a name in Hebrew or Torah culture. The first day of the week is exactly that, the first day of Shabbat. Yom Rishon b'Shabbat, Yom Sheni b'Shabbat, Shlishi b'Shabbat, second, third, fourth. The only day that has a name is the day of Shabbat. So the laws of Zmanim begin with Hilchot Shabbat. In the study of Sefer HaMitzvahs, we begin now to look at Mitzvah Kuf Nun Dalad, the 154th Mitzvah of the Torah, in the Rambam's verbiage, at least translated into Hebrew, Hatzivoy Shenitzavinu Lishbot B'Shabbat. The word Shabbat has a variety of reasons. The simplest organic meaning of the word Shabbat is to cease, to stop. Like in modern Hebrew, a strike is called a Shvita. So this is this idea that we have to be Shvot Mimalacha. We cease work. And the Rambam says that it is actually a positive mitzvah. It's a positive mitzvah to stop. Stop what you're doing. As it says, Ubayom Hashvi'i, on the seventh day, says the Torah, in Aseret HaDibrot, in the tenth statement which God made to us at Mount Sinai, Tishbot. You're going to rest. The Rambam says that this commandment is repeated a number of times in the Torah, and it is explained that the meaning of this Shvita means it's Shvita Mimelacha, that we have to stop. You don't stop breathing, you don't stop eating, you don't stop singing, you stop working. And hi chova lanu, it is obligatory upon us, the Rambam adds, ula vehemtenu, our animals are not permitted to do work for us. Your animal can graze if it wants to graze for itself, but it cannot do work for you. In other words, you can't put a package on his back and have him walk in a place where a person would not be permitted to carry that package himself. The only leniency would be if somebody is in a situation where we're afraid he might violate the Shabbat or he has certain extenuating circumstances. It's better if it's on the back of your animal than if it's on your back. And even so, we would have the animal go very slowly, but this is a little bit complicated halachas. First thing is, you have to keep Shabbat. The Torah says to us, Behemtenu, and Torah says to us that our slaves, not our employees, but our indentured laborers who become part of our family, who are called Eved Kanani, Eved Kanani becomes part Jewish. And therefore, he's obligated in certain mitzvot. We have an obligation to ensure that they are going to be Shomer Shabbat, that they will keep this notion of not doing any work. The Rambam says that this is explained in great detail in the Masechet, in the tractate which is called Shabbat. And he also refers to Masechet Yom Tov, which we call Maseches Beya, or Beitza. In Mishneh Torah, the Rambam makes it very clear that Shvita B'Shvi'i Mimalacha is a mitzvah tasei, is one of the positive commandments. But he says, "Kol ha'osa b'malacha." Anybody who does work on the day of Shabbat, bitel mitzvat asei, he violates a positive mitzvah. Ve'ovar alot asei, and he also violates a negative mitzvah. So, in other words, there are two things at play here. There's a positive mitzvah: do not work, seize everything. And a negative mitzvah: do not do A, B, and C. Don't do things which the Torah prohibits. And the Torah tells us that wherever, the Rambam says a rule. It's a rule. Whenever you're learning the laws of Shabbat, if it says, Ha'isa Dover Zechayav, the person who does this is considered culpable, then you know he has fully violated the positive mitzvah and the negative mitzvah, and he's obligated in all kinds of terrible things if he's doing so wantonly, willingly, and brazenly. And if there's witnesses, it's that much worse. If he does it accidentally, then he has to bring a special offering. But there are a variety of different instances in which we will read in the halacha that a person is patur. Patur means exempt. So what does this mean? It means you're exempt from any kind of formal culpability. There's no punishment, and there's no offering that's required. But that doesn't mean you're allowed to do it. You're still asur la'asodram, says you're not allowed to do it. Why are you not allowed to do it? The Torah didn't prohibit this. The Torah says to do work, we have something which is called an act of violation of Shabbos, an act of work. And you did something which is only a half of a creative activity. So you didn't really violate the Shabbat. So that's true. Biblically, you didn't violate it, but a rabbi is prohibited doing this, and that was a harchoka that distances us from doing work on Shabbat. Now, I'll give you a simple example. On Shabbat, you're not permitted to write. So if you use a writing implement and you write, you're violating the Shabbat. What's called writing? Is it one line called writing? Do I have to write a word? Does it have to be a letter that conveys some kind of meaning? So the general principle is I have to have created two letters because there are lots of words that are comprised of two letters. What if I write one letter? Well, then I didn't formally violate the Shabbat. I didn't actually violate the positive commandment. I didn't actually violate the negative commandment. True. However, I violated Shabbat rabbinically, and it's self-understood that this is not what Hashem wants you to do. You will not be held culpable, but it's not appropriate. It's just like eating. No, muktzah is something else. We're going to get into that. Muktzah is a decree that comes much later on. Much later on in the times of Nehemiah, the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, there were people who basically didn't do any work. They were fat cats, rich. They didn't have to work. So Shabbat was like any other day. They had wonderful meals every day. They sat there twiddling their thumbs, entertaining themselves. Shabbat didn't feel any different. So therefore, we had another series of injunctions so that they would know it's Shabbat. And one of them was not allowed to move certain things about. But this is not talking about muktzah. Muktzah, which literally means that it is hands off. You're not allowed to move it around. It's something that comes later on. The simple biblical mitzvah is that I have to rest, I have to cease from work, and I'm not allowed to do work. Another interesting detail with regard to the laws of Shabbat is that the Rambam tells us, "Duchuyehi Shabbat etzel sakanot nefashot," which means that Shabbat is pushed aside when I have a life to save. What's the difference of the verbiage "duchuya"? So the Kesef Mishnah says there are two expressions we find: "duchuya," which means comes from the word "dachuf," or pushed, and then we have the word of "hutra." Hutra means unknotted, untied. In other words, if I have a situation where there's a life to be saved, so can I do whatever I want to save the life? Or must I attempt to minimize violation of Shabbat? Simple example. You're a physician. There's a life at stake. Can you do whatever is necessary to save the life? 100%. Not only you can, it's a mitzvah to do it. But what if I don't have to do it? What if I just tell somebody what to do and there's no difference? So should the Jewish doctor do it? Or should the Jewish doctor tell his Gentile colleague, hey, why don't you simply have to do A or B or C? So the answer would be, the second option is the preferred one. Because if Shabbat comes and is pardon me, if the sakanas nefashas, the situation of a life in danger, comes and removes the possibility of Shabbat, it's no more Shabbat, it's a regular day for you now, so that makes no difference. Whether you do need to do this exactly, or you could have done this in a different way, it's irrelevant. There's no, Shabbat doesn't apply for you anymore. Here we say, Shabbat certainly applies, and therefore, in any way it's possible to minimize violation of Shabbat, I'm required to do that. So this is why in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel today, we have all this technological booms and the startup nation. One of the things we have are two companies, or two organizations that work. One is called Ish, Institute of Technology and Halacha, I think. Another one's called Somet. But these two companies work on developing mechanisms which should be Shabbat-friendly. So, for example, you have to use the telephone. You're a doctor, no question. But there's a way to use a telephone where you put the number in, and then you're not directly dialing it. It causes it to be dialed a little later, which is called a gurama. Gurama means I cause it to happen. I don't actually do it. So that's better than actually doing it. And since the 25-second delay is not going to result in any kind of terrible thing happening, but it makes the violation of Shabbat more lenient, so they've come up with a Shabbos telephone. Now, Shabbat telephone does not mean that everybody can start using it. It means in a situation where there is sakanat nefashot, even then, if it's possible, I should try to keep the Shabbat to the best of my ability. It is self-understood that if there will be the slightest question of somebody's life being in danger, then we don't look at the details of Shabbat, and we do absolutely whatever is necessary, because the holiest thing in the world is life, and life, saving life, certainly supersedes the mitzvahs of keeping Shabbat, as it is written, v'chai bohem, you have to live within them, v'lo sheyomot bohem, not chas v'shalom, that we should die with them. And we also know, mutav, it is better, levatel Shabbat achat, to violate a single Shabbat, in order, lishmor Shabbatot acherot, so that you will be able to keep many more Shabbatot in the future. It's interesting to note that even if somebody probably won't make it to another Shabbat, we still violate the Shabbat to save him, because it says v'chai b'hem. So we have both ideas. Somebody needs to be kept alive, and he'll keep many Shabbatot, keep him alive. He's not going to live for another Shabbat. So what? Every moment of life is precious. And therefore, v'chai b'hem, as long as we can keep a person alive and keep this mitzvah, this special commandment of Hashem, the mitzvah of Shabbat, and we do our very best to keep it as Hashem ordains in His Holy Torah. And that concludes today's shir. Tomorrow we will talk more about the mitzvot of Shabbat.